I'm utterly speechless. Not common with me, as you know only too well. That was Erika Marini with Michal Rauchhausen at the piano. We just heard Capriccio Waltz by Wieniawski, and before that, the Variations on Theme by Corelli, arranged by Fritz Kreisler. Well, that's it from me, Rob Cowan, for this morning, for Sunday morning. Thank you so much for your company. James Jolly will be back with you next week. And if you're around tomorrow at 9, do join me for Essential Classics, where my guest is the writer Sally Vickers and my artist of the week, the conductor Bernard Haitink.
Sunday Morning with Rob Cowan is a unique production for BBC Radio 3, with studio production this morning by Neil Miners.
Shakespeare Unlocked.
On BBC Two, a search for the best young Shakespearean actors.
Shakespeare's language is of our time, as well as the Elizabethan time.
Once more into the breach, dear friends, once more.
We're looking for passion, eloquence.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
The language that's the most glorious thing ever done in English.
But soft, what light through yonder window breaks?
How does one man continue to inspire so many? Off by Heart Shakespeare, next Saturday at 9 on BBC Two.
BBC Radio 3. It's just gone 12 o'clock and time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Craig Revel Horwood hardly needs any introduction to aficionados of Strictly Come Dancing, he's the tough one, by the way, or the BBC's latest series of Maestro, in which contestants get to conduct opera at the Royal Opera House. Craig has danced, acted and choreographed. Indeed, in a previous visit to Covent Garden, he helped put on the Ballet Boys. As his autobiography, All Balls and Glitter, reveals, Craig's had what one might call a colourful life. Is that fair?
Yes, I think that's fair to say. Rent boy, drag queen, all that sort of stuff.
Done it all.
You know, dancing, cooking, all sorts of things. Yeah.
And in fact, you obviously got the conducting bug a bit because you were conducting the signature tune as we went along.
Yes, I have got the bug. My right hand just won't stay still now, sadly. No matter where I am, I could be in a bar, I could be in a pub, I could be in a restaurant, and it just literally has a mind of its own. It's odd. It's been, I have to say, fantastic doing Maestro at the Opera. I've really, really, really enjoyed it. You know, and what I don't know about music, darling, is no one's business now. It's hilarious.
You wouldn't have minded a bit more rehearsal?
Well, yes, a little bit more rehearsal would have been nice. I mean, you can't possibly, I don't think, conduct beautifully in literally 1 month. I think it really does take a good apprenticeship of 3 to 5 years, you know, to really, really train and then develop your own style. I've had to do it very, very quickly, obviously, because it is television. And plus, I guess it's good to see celebrities sweat. You know,
well, I was going to say, you know, it's the mirror image, isn't it? Because
yes.
And in fact, if there was anything that could be as terrifying as doing Come Dancing in front of you lot, I guess standing up in front of a hard-bitten professional orchestra like that of the Royal Opera House, who are used to being conducted by Pappano and
yes,
the past people like Schulte, that's quite something.
Yes, I have to say, it's been most humiliating all the way through. But, I mean, when you get it right, it really does feel quite spectacular. It's a euphoric sort of feeling that you just can't really explain in words. It's as if your soul has taken flight and you're just free-falling with nothing to land on, you know, that it's just endless. It was amazing. The adrenaline rush from it as well. But the nerves, to begin with, are just awful. I can't tell you how nervous I was.
I think I find watching Strictly Come Dancing, I always rather appreciate, I know some people like to sort of love to hate you, if you like, because you're tough on people, but it seems to me that anything which involves a kind of artistry requires criticism. And you don't mind it yourself, do you? I mean, you sort of welcome.
I prefer it. I prefer to be told the truth. And particularly, you know, I said at the beginning of Maestro at the Opera to my mentor, Michael Rosewell, who's a fantastic conductor and who is a teacher as well, you know, music and all sorts. And I said to him, you know, be hard on me. I don't want to hear any sort of, oh, that's great, you're wonderful. I want to hear, that's wrong, fix it.
And I would imagine that as somebody who has been used to translating rhythm into movement, you have a slight advantage over your other contestants because you do know what it's like to have some synchronicity.
Yes, but you see, the complication with that is that you end up dancing on the podium and not actually telling the story of the music or drawing the music out of the musicians.
That's true.
And the job, of course, and it is a job and a very, very tough one, is to combine your skills at communicating with your body to draw the music out of not only the singers, but the orchestra, and to keep everyone on the same page so they're all making the music together as one. And that is sort of the hardest thing. You know, I've been trained in classical ballet, so I end up doing sort of ballet arms when I start doing my fours and my threes. And actually, it's not about what you look like so much as how you communicate and use the skills that I've been taught with the baton to communicate.
And course, give the upbeat.
Well, yes, absolutely. You don't realise how much the conductor changes the quality of the music. And I sort of tried that out with the orchestra during the show, where you could take just one bar of music, but colour it with a smile, or colour it with your eyes, or colour it with just a breath. It really is unbelievable how sensitive the players are to the music and to you as a conductor.
Actually, this is a wonderful example we've got coming up, because you wouldn't start this overture with a smile, would you?
Well, no. No, you wouldn't. I love overtures anyway, as a rule. I mean, I could just listen to a whole album of just overtures, but I love Don Giovanni. I love that because of the character, really. The very dark, sordid, sexy character sort of in the whole, you know, it represents real life. And I just adore Mozart. I've had the pleasure of conducting Act One, Scene One, which is directly after the overture. And it was just amazing. It was so good for me because I was at that point conducting in a very large, exuberant and flamboyant fashion. And Mozart taught me to work very, very small and hold the music almost in my hand and beat very, very lightly with my baton. So it was good for containing and just fantastic music.
Thank you.
Music from Don Giovanni, the overture from Act One of Mozart's opera, the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, conducted by Claudio Abbado.
What's interesting, of course, about the overture, you know, you could do a wonderful ballet to that, of course. I just absolutely adore the music. And it maintains a sort of structure. It doesn't keep chopping and changing. Yes, yeah, so there's a light and shade in all of it. But, I mean, directly after that wonderful music, of course, there's a rape and a murder. I mean, it's the first 5 minutes are just extraordinary. You know, I think that still shocks people to date, you know, if you've never seen it. And that's what's sort of wonderful about Mozart. And it's small, you know, it's contained, and then it explodes. I just love it.
And then suddenly he'll do some harmony, which must have sounded so daring in its time.
Yes.
You know, sort of grating. When you compare that to Puccini, for example, which is, I imagine, a broader kind of brushstroke.
Oh, yes.
And also, but, of course, the rhythms sometimes change from bar to bar.
Yes, that's right. I mean, Puccini will start in something like 6-8 that you have to conduct in sort of 2, and then it will just suddenly turn into 3-4, then that 3-4 bar will turn into a 2-4 bar, and then it'll go back to a 3-4 bar, and then go directly into a 4-4 bar, which will then go back to a 3-4, then you end up in a 9-8 bar for quite a long time. It's quite extraordinary, you know, that's what I love about it. You don't know what to expect. You don't necessarily hear that when you listen to the lines in the music. You know, if you're just sat at home listening to the music and you're not particularly musical in that way, you know, you would listen to the floaty lines that go above it. But there's a lot of counterpoint in it, you know, there's a lot of argument within it, which I absolutely love. And I think that's the brilliance of him. He was complete and absolute genius. And of course, La Boheme was the first opera I ever saw. And I saw that at the Sydney Opera House when I was about, I think, 19 or something like that. And a friend of mine, Adele, who trained to be an opera singer, eventually took me to it. And I just remember there was one thing that I recall right at the end when Mimi is dying, of course, of consumption, and her hands are cold and she drops her muff, and the surtitles were reading, "Go for the muff, go for the muff." I couldn't help but laugh. I thought, I've got to come and see opera more often, darling. I couldn't believe it. You wouldn't dare put it up, would you, like that in a surtitle nowadays? I don't think, but it was quite amusing at the time. I had to contain myself because it's one of the most dramatic moments in the piece, you know, in Act Four.
Curiously enough, the bit you've chosen is the same bit that Andrew Lloyd Webber chose a few months ago on the programme.
Ah.
And I know we're coming on to him later.
Yes.
Which is Musetta's Waltz, isn't it?
Yes, well, I love that because I love the character. Musetta, she's such a rat bag, really, I suppose you could say. She's fascinating, you know, and she tries to make Marcello jealous. She's sort of with this older guy, really, at the time. And then she's a singer and she decides to get up in the cafe and to turn everybody on to make them all jealous. And it's just such a fun number. And it reminds me of just musical theatre in the West End, for instance. You know, it's very much in that vein, although being operatic. It's for a soprano, which I love, and she uses her soprano voice to maximum effect, of course.
Puccini's often derided as being sort of sentimental, but he was technically very brilliant, the way he pulls together several themes at once there.
He's just incredible. I mean, the more you study the music, the more genius you think it is. I mean, there's so many undercurrents as well, and so many stories going on underneath the surface. That's what is, I think, the best part about it.
Musetta's Waltz from La Boheme, Act 2. By Puccini. We heard Gianna D'Angelo singing Musetta with the orchestra of the Academy of St. Cecilia, Rome, conducted by Tullio Serafin. I know tango has inspired you, Craig,
yes,
in your choreography. And, of course, it's only relatively recently that we all discovered the work of Astor Piazzolla.
Yes, that's right. Well, I was commissioned, really, I suppose, by the Ballet Boys for the Royal Festival Hall when it was...
After it was refurbished.
Yes, after the refurbishment, and it was to reopen it. And the Ballet Boys, who, of course, is Michael Nunn and William Trevor, who I call Billy, they asked me to do something for them. They wanted to do a sort of dance together, and they wanted it to be sort of maybe tango-esque or whatever. So I was in New Zealand at the time doing Dancing with the Stars, and that's where I sort of trained to do Argentine tango. And I was just piling through loads and loads of normal tango music, and then I came across this wonderful piece that combined two of the greatest legends in tango ever and placed them together so they would explode. And it was absolutely fantastic, because I thought, well, actually, one of those composers, one of the dancers could represent, the other dancer could represent, and they could dance the movements of those composers and then attack one another. And that gave them good reason to dance together. And of course, Astor Piazzolla, who is a bigwig, you know, and Osvaldo Pugliese, of course. I was looking at both of them and I had no clue that they met in the Netherlands and did a concert with their own orchestras either side of the stage, because one would play one piece, the other would play the other piece, and then the finale, of course, was them trying to outdo one another at the same time with their own pieces. And it was brilliant. And I thought, this is the music. I love it. And I brought it back to Michael and Billy, and we started work on it. And it was the most fun I think I've ever had in a rehearsal room. It was great fun.
Thank you.
finally together, Asta Piazzolla and Osvaldo Pugliese, combining La Yomba and Adios Nonino. I mentioned earlier Craig Revel Horwood, Andrew Lloyd Webber. And of course, you were in Cats, I think, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Actually, the list of your choreography and appearances is quite staggering.
Yeah, it is, I suppose. But like, I am old, darling. And I started quite young. I was in West Side Story, was my first musical.
Isn't that the greatest?
Well, yes, completely. But the hilarious thing was, as soon as my opening night, I walked into the stage door and there was a closing notice for 2 weeks. So I had 2 weeks of, wonderful professional glamour. And then, of course, I went on to the Black and White Minstrel Show. And then when I came over to this part of the world, I did Cats. I did Cats in Blackpool and sort of did it all around the traps, and culminated, I think, the tour in Dublin at what was called the Point Theatre then, of course, the O2 now. And then I did it in the West End. I grew up with Andrew Lloyd Webber, listening to, all of his shows. And I suppose it was in my 20s when I was in musicals. So he was, and still is, a very big wig, within the industry, and wrote some magnificent tunes.
And which one have you chosen?
Well, this one is because I really love the show Sunset Boulevard, only because I just love that character, Norma Desmond, the silent movie queen that just is getting too old, not really making it. And then she goes back to the studio and she's smelling the air, darling, and she sings this fabulous song, As If We Never Said Goodbye.
I don't know why I'm frightened. I know my way around here. The cardboard trees, the painted sea, the sound here. Yes, a world to rediscover. But I'm not in any hurry. And I need a moment. The whispered conversations in overcrowded halls. As thrilling here as always. Feel the early morning madness. Feel the magic in the making. Why, everything's as if we never said goodbye. I've spent so many mornings just trying to resist you. I'm trembling now. You can't know how I've missed you. Miss the fairy tale adventures in this ever spinning playground. We were young. It's already burning. Not long until the cameras will start turning. And the early morning madness and the magic in the making. Yes, everything's as if we never said goodbye. I don't want to be alone.
whispered conversation in overcrowded hallways. So much to say, not just today, but always. Will I have early morning madness? Will I have magic in the making? Yes, everything's as if we never said goodbye. Yes, everything's as if we never said goodbye.
As If We Never Said Goodbye, from Sunset Boulevard, Act Two, by Andrew Lloyd Webber. And we heard Glenn Close singing Norma Desmond. Curiously enough, that thing of sort of rather regretfully looking back at something that just cannot be underlines the plot of the next opera. And of course, it also reminds us of your love of overtures or preludes in this case.
Absolutely. Yes, well, I absolutely adore this opera. And I think Zeffirelli made me adore it even more, even though I think some people don't like the movie version, but it's La Traviata, and I just think it's one of the most immaculate operas by Verdi. And this prelude has to go down in history as one of the best ever.
Thank you. It's amazing, Craig, how effective, you know, you've got a but that long lyrical line over early Italian opera kind of accompaniment still works magically.
Oh, absolutely. Sort of like a menace, an underlying problem, which I love. I just absolutely adore that. I mean, I love the whole opera. I think it's wonderful.
We heard the prelude to Act One from La Traviata by Verdi, the Philharmonia conducted by Jacek Kapczyk. You've been exposed to such a huge variety of music. I mean, for example, you've produced Copacabana, haven't you? Barry Manilow.
I did a lot of things at the Watermill Theatre and with the company that are all actor musicians. And you can have a lot of fun then, you see, by reducing it, like the Reduced Shakespeare Company does. I sort of take epic things like Sunset Boulevard, like Copacabana, huge, big, massive shows like Matanguer also, and reduce them in a way so you get to the heart of the piece. And that's what I sort of absolutely love. But yeah, I have a broad cross-section of musical tastes, I suppose. And I love soul. I went to New York when I was a kid and I saw a show on Broadway that changed my life forever, because I knew what I wanted to do from that moment on. And it was a show called Dreamgirls, and there was a woman in it who was playing Effie, and she is like big, she was huge lady who had a belter of a voice. And the story is she sort of gets kicked out of a Supreme type group. Most people would probably know the story because there's been a fabulous movie about it with Jennifer Hudson, of course. But this particular performance was just annihilating. I mean, to the point where it's the first time I ever stood in a theatre immediately at the end of her big note. It's Jennifer Holliday and she sings And I Am Telling You, and it's the best thing I think I've ever seen in the theatre live, ever.
I'm not.
So, Craig, that would get your rarely given 10.
Most definitely. I mean, she was 19 when she sang that. It's hard to believe. I just think it's incredible. And I was lucky enough to, well, when I went back to New York many, many years later, to have dinner with her. I mean, she's lost all the weight. It's amazing. She looks a different person, but she still gets asked to sing that song plenty of times, I'm sure.
And I'm telling you, I'm not going. Jennifer Holliday singing from Dreamgirls, books and lyrics by Tom Ayan, and the music by Henry Krieger. Some of the things and the lists of things you've done, I hardly know. I mean, something sounds rather fascinating called When Harry Met Barry.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about
that. Musical. Well, it's sort of based on the premise of When Harry Met Sally, but obviously it was a little bit of a gay one, darling. Unlike my music choices, I don't know if anyone can tell that I'm gay. that was a musical that we put on just trying out, because I love doing things that are different. You know, I get a lot of offers and I generally choose all the weird sort of ones. You know, I prefer doing that. There was another show I did called Eating Raoul, which was hilarious as well, that came from America. And that's all about this woman and this guy who want to actually set up a restaurant, you know, in the country. And of course, they kill someone and then put him in the pies. I just love doing stuff that's sort of a little bit off the wall.
You like trying everything, really.
Oh, absolutely.
Including marriage.
Including marriage, yes. Well, you know, it's nice marriage. Being straight occasionally. I had a lovely girlfriend for a year. And then, of course, I wanted to have kids. That's what I really wanted, you know, and you can't help who you fall in love with. And that's just something that happens in life, as a lot of people out there know.
Operetta, Franz Lehár.
I love operetta. I've done loads of them. I've done stuff in Bregenz, you know. I've done De Kuhhandel, which is Kurt Weill, and that was called Arms and the Cow over here. I love the idea of them, the Mikado, you know, those sort of things. But this particular track, it just makes me laugh because she's going on about her hot lips. You have to listen to
meine Lippen.
Yeah, meine Lippen.
Die Küssen, so heiß.
Yeah, it's hilarious. In Maestro at the Opera, we had to learn this one to try and conduct it. And then I looked it up on YouTube and I saw the most magnificent performance. And this, of course, is the same artist.
Thank you.
Meine Lippen, die küssen so heiß, from Judita, Act 4. We heard Anna Netrebko with the Prague Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Emmanuel Viaume. We're going to end, Craig, with a Sting number, but I think what probably interests you here is it's sung by a really rather remarkable woman.
Oh, yes, Ava Cassidy. I mean, I think most people know her now, don't they? I mean, she's become hugely famous, so it's an odd thing, isn't it? That you sometimes have to die to become like the most famous person. What I love about this is no real reason apart from the fact I just absolutely adore this woman's voice. I absolutely love what she does with the song, and I can just listen all day, every day to her albums. You know, her interpretation of the stuff is just immaculate, and of course this is one of my absolute favourites.
But actually, you know, in a way, what a singer does, the way they colour something, is as fundamental as what you were saying a conductor can do.
Oh,
and you realise that now, having seen the difference.
Oh, completely. I'm absolutely sensitive now to how certain things are conducted. You know, when you hear opera, you know, you could take that operetta too fast and then it would be ruined. And similarly, on this particular track, which I adore, Fields of Gold.
You remember me when the west wind moves among the fields of barley. You can tell the sun in his jealous sky. So she took her love for to gaze a while among the fields of barley. In his arms she fell as her hair came down among the fields of gold. Will you stay? Will you be my love?
to go. I never made promises lightly. There have been some that I've broken, but I swear in the days still left, we'll walk in fields of gold. We'll walk in fields of gold.
Fields of Gold by Sting. We heard Eva Cassidy, vocals and acoustic guitar, and playing the electric guitar was Keith Grimes. Well, Craig Revel-Horwood, thank you so much for sharing both your private and public passions with us. And I can only wish you very good luck for the final round of Maestro. And I have to say, if you do as entertainingly as you have done in the last hour, I think you'll walk it.
I hope so. But it's been a fantastic experience. I mean, I love music. And it's just so wonderful, isn't it, when you hear orchestrations like that. And when music moves you, I think, is, I don't know, just a fantastic sort of human experience, isn't it?
Craig Revel-Horwood was talking to Michael Barclay, and we'll have to wait till next Friday to find out how Craig got on in the final of Maestro at the Opera. Next week, Michael Barclay's guest on Private Passions will be the writer Tessa Hadley. Private Passions is a classic arts production for Radio 3, and the producer of today's programme was Sarah Cropper. A concert of Baroque music from across Europe. On Radio 3, live in concert, the Lufthansa Festival of Baroque Music opens its doors for 2012 with an international lineup of composers. Lully's incidental music for a Molière play, the Italian Concerto Grosso writing of Corelli and Geminiani, and two great musical travellers, Handel and Boccherini.
Rock Europe's greatest musical nations brought together in Radio 3 Live in Concert, Friday night, live at 7:30.
And that's here on BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. It's 1:01, time for the news now with Lopa Qatari.
Condolences have been sent by the Defence Secretary, Philip Hammond, to the families of two British servicemen who've been shot dead by members of the Afghan police force. One was from 1st Battalion Welsh Guards, the other was an airman from the Royal Air Force. Their families have been told. A senior official involved in negotiations with opponents of President Karzai has been shot dead in Kabul. Ursula Rahmani had been part of the Taliban government before becoming a member of the Afghan parliament. Talks aimed at trying to resolve the political crisis in Greece have been taking place in Athens. The president met leaders of the three main parties in what is being seen as a final effort to form a government in the wake of the country's inconclusive elections a week ago. He's due to have more discussions later today. Greek politicians remain deeply divided about the strict austerity measures needed for the country to receive international bailouts. Police in Spain have removed the last protesters from the main square in the capital, Madrid. Tens of thousands had thronged the area in the latest protest against austerity. Many defied a deadline of midnight to disperse. The authorities in Georgia have declared a state of emergency and sent troops into the capital, Tbilisi, after the river running through the city burst its banks following prolonged heavy rain. At least five people have been killed and dozens injured. Administrators for Rangers say they've accepted a takeover bid from the former Sheffield United chief executive, Charles Green. The Glasgow Football Club went into administration in February. The operators of the helicopter which ditched in the North Sea last week have grounded more of their fleet. Bond Offshore Helicopters had already suspended flights of the same type of Super Puma. It's now also grounded a similar aircraft. And finally, the weather. The heavy rain in the west of Scotland will spread across many northern areas, but it should stay dry and sunny in central and southern England and Wales. The rain will continue southwards overnight, with showers following from the north. That's the latest BBC News. The time is coming up to 1:04.
And that was Lopa Qatari. I'm Jill Anderson. Good afternoon to you. Just looking ahead to 2:00 this afternoon, Tom Service will be introducing coverage of this year's Royal Philharmonic Society Music Awards, the UK's premier awards ceremony for live classical music. The ceremony was last Tuesday at the Dorchester Hotel in London, and we'll find out who won what this afternoon at 2:00. But now it's time for today's early music show, which will be introduced by Lucy Skeeping.
French pianist Alexandre Tarot playing music by Rameau. That was Les Tricotés, or The Knitters, a punning title that perhaps alludes to the idea of dropping stitches as the music shifts between irregular time signatures. actually, it's only comparatively recently that pianists have plucked up the courage to take a serious look at the solo keyboard works of Jean-Philippe Rameau, bring them into the mainstream repertoire. Tarot himself is one of several champions of this music from the Baroque, which for many years was thought to be the sole property of the early music specialist. Surely a reminder of just how wonderful they are. So today I thought we'd revel in the world of Rameau's Pièce de Clavecin, his solo harpsichord works. I've chosen an array of items from his various books and selected a myriad of celebrated harpsichordists to perform them.